Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't
you know we're gonna have a Solartopia?
Started to burn too many things we found. This is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman coming to you with the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show here at PRN FM and based in New York. Podcast worldwide, all over the internet. Well, it lasts, I guess, another couple of days before the Trump-Putin attacks net neutrality. We'll see what's going to happen with that. And we have just had one of the most important elections in the history of our country, actually, the California primary. There are a bunch of primaries around the country, but of course, the United States of America now tilts towards California. 40 million people, sixth or fifth largest economy in the world, and 53 congressional seats. Out of more than 10% of the federal Congress, House of Representatives, those seats come from California, all of them up for grabs in Tuesday's primary, along with a U.S. Senate seat and the governorship of what could be, I don't know, California probably, what, the 20th or 30th largest country in the world. But we have done today's show. We are going to be talking primarily about the California primary and about politics in general in this country. And I've got some great guests, but I am going to make a prediction right now. You have heard it first, that if the Democrats win either House of the Congress, hopefully both of them, but if they win either the House or the Senate, and I think they have a pretty good chance of winning the House, that Donald Trump will resign. And I believe that to be true because he is a criminal. His criminal history goes all the way back to the 80s when he started laundering money for the Russian mafia. You have to remember that Donald Trump grew up in a mafia household. His father, Fred, who was a Ku Klux Klan supporter, was also neck deep, whatever you want to call it, with the mafia. Nobody did developing. Nobody was a slumlord in New York City without doing business with the Gambini, Genovese, or three other major families in the New York mob. And so Donald Trump grew up with the mob. He, since the 80s, being a lousy businessman, continually going bankrupt, needed money, and it came from the Russians. And it's not so much that the Russians tilted our election, which they did help. There's no doubt about that. It's that Donald Trump has been doing illegal business for nigh on 30 years. And if the Democrats get control of one of the houses of Congress, they will have the committees to do the investigations. And I do not in any way, shape, or form think that Donald Trump is going to stick around for that. So that's my prediction. You heard it here first. If the Democrats win one of the houses of Congress, which I think will be the House, and I think they will, I think that between November and January, when the new House or Congress takes its seats, that Donald Trump will resign. Okay? You want to take me up on that? Email me at solartopia@gmail.com. I'll give you even odds, and we'll see what happens. Okay, so we're going to devote today's hour to a riveting discussion of the elections that have just happened. They're proceeding to happen, and especially the election that just happened in California, which is immensely important to the future of this country. It could, in fact, determine whether the Democrats get the House. There are 53 congressional seats in California. Currently, 39 are held by Democrats, 14 by Republicans. There are 7 congressional seats here that are going to be extremely hotly contested. And to set the tone, California has what's called a jungle primary. which is you don't have the Democrat and the Republican. Whoever comes in first and second, they're the ones who stand in the November primary, so in the November election. So you can, in fact, have two Democrats or two Republicans running against each other for the seat, and that has happened now in the extremely important U.S. Senate seat, which is currently held by Dianne Feinstein, and she will be facing another Democrat, Kevin DeLeon. And that's one of the major things we're going to talk about. I've got three great guests. Susie Shannon, you've been with us before. Susie, pipe up if you would.
Hi, Harvey. Thanks for having me on the show again.
Well, you're terrific, and thank you for cooperating with me and getting our other two guests, who I'm really excited to have. RL, are you with us?
Yes. Thanks so much for having me. This is RL Miller from Climate Hawks Vote.
Yes. And Larry Gross, are you with us?
I am, and I'm wishing that your predictions come true.
Well, from my mouth to God's ears, as my mother used to say. So let's do this. I do not generally like to introduce my guests. I like to have you identify yourselves. So because there are four of us, we're going to kind of go in a key here. We'll go with Susie and then RL and then Larry. And we'll just go round robin, except for me, since I'm the big mocker here. I get to intervene and jump in. But let's start talking first and foremost about the U.S. Senate race here in California. It is a unique race. I don't know how. Well, I guess the last time California had a Senate race, it was also two Democrats. At that point, it was two women, and one of them, of course, won and is now being talked about as a possible presidential candidate. Susie Shannon, please give us your creds. And then you are very close to Kevin DeLeon, who came in second and who will be running against Dianne Feinstein. So why don't you identify yourself and then talk a bit about this race, and then we'll go to RL and Larry, okay?
Sure. So just in the interest of full disclosure, I'm a member of the Democratic National Committee, and I'm on the executive board of the California Democratic Party, and I'm an anti-poverty activist working with homeless and low-income communities. So, yes, I was a supporter of Kevin DeLeon and remain one, and was very excited that he finished in the top two. I think he's a very dynamic leader. And I know that Harvey, you and I have had just conversations about him, where you were, sort of comparing him to Bernie Sanders, or, basically saying, he needs to move to the left and have a grassroots campaign. And he already is to the left. He has an incredible record, on the environment, sweeping legislation on climate change, which he authored. Sweeping legislation on homelessness, the No Place Like Home initiative, which he authored. He is the author of SB 54, which created a sanctuary state for the state of California. And he has a record of being progressive. So there's no running from that record. And he's not trying to. As he said in his victory speech, he's not a finger in the wind candidate, which is why we love him so much. And I think it sort of harkens back to sort of Paul Wellstone's campaign, his first campaign where he took on Rudy Boschwitz. And if you know anything about that campaign, Rudy had a 70% approval rating. He was sort of an independent or Republican. But he was, somebody that it wasn't clear that was ever going to be beaten. He stayed in Washington, D.C., very similar to Dianne Feinstein. He outspent Paul Wellstone 7-1. And it really seemed like this sort of David and Goliath situation in that race. And it's, Kevin DeLeon reminds me a lot of Paul Wellstone. He's very rooted in the people. He, understands sort of grassroots campaigning. And I think he's going to give Dianne Feinstein a run for her money, or a lot of money coming from her campaign in this race. And, you know, I know that, you know, people look at the numbers, you know, just from the primary, which had a very low turnout. And, you know, they try to make predictions. It's very hard to do that because I think for the general, we'll have a larger turnout, but also, you know, there needs to be, you know, grassroots efforts for voter registration and mobilization to help get people out. But I'm very excited about Kevin and his campaign, and I think he's gonna surprise everyone.
Well, Kevin DeLeon is the president of the state assembly. Is that correct?
Well, he's a president emeritus now because he just ended his term.
Of the California State Senate, not Assembly.
Senate. Okay, he was a state senator. And he was raised by a single mother and is of Hispanic descent, obviously, and is young. He's 50 years old and unmarried, so which is interesting. Dianne Feinstein, of course, is the incumbent. RL, do you want to tell us a bit about Dianne Feinstein? I'm only a Californian. This is the first time I voted in California, by the way. I moved here. It was an interesting experience. I had those horrible punch cards, which I hope to never see again. And, you know, we need hand-counted paper ballots like everybody else. I did not enjoy the experience of voting on a punch card, but I did vote here. RL, do you want to jump in and tell us a bit about Dianne and how you view this race for the Senate seat?
Sure. And let me introduce myself first. I'm RL Miller. I wear two hats, neither one of which says Make America Great Again. I'm the chair of the California Democratic Party's Environmental Caucus. I also run a nonprofit by the name of Climate Hawks Vote. And what we try to do is build political power for the climate movement. We're grassroots based. And before we endorse candidates, and a lot of what we do is endorsing candidates and try to get them elected. We only look for people who are truly fierce about climate change. And before endorsing, we run surveys in usually a small congressional district to see how our members feel about it. And in this one, before endorsing, we asked our members whether our 30,000 plus California members, whether we should vote for Kevin DeLeon or Dianne Feinstein. And it came back overwhelmingly in favor of Kevin. Climate people know Kevin's extraordinary track record on leadership. He's the guy who wrote the bills that have made California the nationally and internationally known as a climate leader. He's the guy who flies to talk with the Pope when the Pope asks to talk to experts on climate change. He's in sharp contrast to Dianne Feinstein. You asked about her. And what she has done is be a reliable vote in the Senate on the issue of climate change. And that's really the only thing I could say. When you ask her about her environmental record, she says that she created she signed that big Mojave Desert Protection Act into law. That was 1994. I believe it was her first term in the Senate. And she's also touted some work that she did with Olympia Snow regarding cleaner cars in 2007.
But you chose to support Kevin DeLeon over her.
Strongly support. My members came back overwhelmingly. My group has endorsed Kevin DeLeon. We have fundraised for him. We expect to be very, very committed to this race. We don't see this as him coming in. I know a lot of people are right now trying to say that, oh, he came in a distant second. But the way I look at it is that she's the best known Senate political figure in the entire state of California. And she's spent $3.5 million on the primary. She pulled out her biggest possible endorsement, the endorsement of Barack Obama, and she still couldn't get more than 50% of Californians to vote for her. Obviously, the field was wildly fractured. We had 32 candidates running. We had three claiming to be the true progressives. Kevin showed up to debate those three candidates. I call them the three H's because their last names all started with H. But now the dynamics of this race have changed drastically. It's now a two-person race instead of a 32-person race. Kevin needed to just do enough and spend enough to get into that race, and now she's going to need to debate him. The race is about the future of California, and that's a discussion that Kevin really wants to have about where California is going, what California values are, and whether Dianne Feinstein is still in touch with those California values.
All right. Very good. Larry Gross, let's hear from you.
Yes. So I am the executive director of the Coalition for Economic Survival. For the last 45 years, we've been organizing low and moderate income people throughout the L.A. area, empowering them to win particularly tenants' rights. We led the effort to bring rent control to the city of Los Angeles and has won every law that protects tenants in L.A. We actually created the city of West Hollywood through an incorporation campaign to maintain and strengthen rent control there and elected our grassroots members to the city council. We are involved in HUD-subsidized housing, trying to preserve our existing affordable housing, given that the L.A. area is one of the most unaffordable places in the nation, where we have one quarter of our residents living under poverty levels, and we have the most overcrowded conditions, and we're the homeless capital of the nation, and people are paying upwards of 50 to 60% of their income to rent. So all these issues have a direct impact. The other thing I disclose as well, I'm an elected state officer of the California Democratic Party. I'm a regional director in the L.A. area and also serve on the state executive board.
Okay, so who did you support in this Senate race?
Well, absolutely, without a doubt, Kevin DeLeon. And Kevin is an interesting case here. I mean, he may be the real American dream or that we've all dreamt about as far as coming up through his life. He, as you had mentioned, he's the son of a single immigrant mother who supported her family living in the San Diego barrio and working as a housekeeper and other pickup jobs. He was the first in his family to graduate from high school and college, and before entering politics, Kevin served as a community organizer and taught English as a second language and U.S. citizenship and advocated for public schools. And as you mentioned, he was the Senate President Pro Tem, the first a Latino to hold that position in over a century. And so Kevin was assembly member and then became a senator. And what's so amazing about him is just watching him develop. You could see when he came into the assembly, he wasn't that progressive, but he was open-minded and he learned and he connected with the community. And through his terms in office, he became more and more progressive and more of a leader on these issues, and really provides us with a lot of hope for the future to stand up against the assault that poor and working people are facing in this country today and to bring us into a new and a better future. So we're really excited about this campaign. He's lit the fire amongst many progressives throughout California, seeing hope and and becoming more involved in the electoral process?
Okay, so I don't want to make it seem that this show is a promotional show for Kevin DeLeon. I do, and I'm on the show next week. But I'm going to very quickly, I want to run some odds, and then I'm going to talk how I feel about this thing, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. Susie, what do you think the odds are that Kevin can win this race? Las Vegas odds. You and I were in Las Vegas together, so... What do you think the Las Vegas odds are that Kevin can win?
Susie, you want me to take a stab at it?
Yes.
Sure. And let me give you a little bit of background here. Kevin always knew that he was going to finish second in the primary. There's a long history. Well, I shouldn't say long because we've only had this weird top two system for a few years. But there's a lot of people in California who have finished in the second in the primary, sometimes lost by a lot, been written off by the political establishment, and then gone on to triumph in the general. And in just to give you one example, in California's 44th district, Climate Hawks Vote backed Nanette Barragán very, very early on as the progressive in that race. She lost to the guy backed by the California Democratic Party by 20 points in the primary. She had 20 points. He had 40 points. A bunch of other candidates split the remaining 40% of the vote. And she is now a sitting United States member of Congress. And I might add, turning out to be quite a rising star. she did this in large part by working her tail off, by actually going out and speaking to voters, and by connecting with people. And she was doing a lot of the same things that I find in Kevin's campaign. Kevin works really, really hard. He goes out to all corners of the state, and when he shows up, he's treated like a rock star everywhere. And so I would say that the odds are maybe 50-50. Now, maybe I'm an optimist. It's not going to be an easy race. He's going to need people's help. He's going to need volunteer time. He's going to need money. He's going to need energy. But I think that he's actually got a pretty good shot. And, Susie, I apologize for stepping on your toes.
Oh, that's okay. So I'm sorry. I accidentally muted my phone, I think.
We wondered what happened to you.
I was saying that I think he has a pretty good shot if he's, you know, we have a U.S. senator who really isn't anywhere around the state. She, you know, is basically going to run slick TV ads and outspend him clearly. But if he runs a campaign that's, you know, rooted in the people and, you know, he is able to, you know, run a professional campaign too, you know, hiring people who, you know how to win. I think he's got a really good shot. And I think one of the points that I was making was that a question that needs to be posed to the California electorate is whether or not they want to pick their next U.S. senator, because it's likely that Dianne Feinstein is not going to serve out her entire term, and if that's the case, then the governor will get to pick the successor. So, you know, I'm a Democrat. I believe in democracy. I think people should be able, to pick their elected leaders. And I think basically, even just based on that, Kevin should be able to make, you know, the case.
Well, maybe one of the things to do, Gavin Newsom, who is pretty much the obvious next governor of California, is going to be out campaigning. Maybe somebody should ask him at one of his campaign appearances, if Dianne Feinstein is reelected and chooses to retire, as is highly likely, she's 84 now, will you give the seat to Kevin DeLeon? Someone should ask him that. That would be a big news in the state. Maybe he should be put on the spot right now. What do you think, Larry? What do you think about that?
Well, I wouldn't hold our breath to get an answer on that one. I mean, it is clear that we're the underdogs, or Kevin's the underdogs, and it's up against great odds. The whole political establishment and a wealthy candidate who has name ID, and it's going to take a lot of work and effort, but it can be done. And I think that one of the things that is key is getting them in a debate and getting people to be able to see the choice. Because once I think people see what their choice is, it'll be clear to them that if they want someone who's going to fight on their behalf, who's in step with the state and where the state is at and where it needs to go, Kevin's going to be their choice.
Okay, well, Kevin is 50 and she's 84, so there is a slight difference there. So I'm going to chime in here. A lot of my listeners, of course, most I think do not live in California, and they're maybe scratching their heads why we're paying so much attention to this particular race. And I do want to talk about the congressional races in a couple of minutes. But I want to posit something. I have met Kevin DeLeon. I have not met Dianne Feinstein, actually. But the reason I think that this is one of the most important races in the whole country is my feeling is that the real problem we face in this country is not just Donald Trump. It's the leadership of the corporate Democratic Party. You know, in a normal situation, a would-be dictator in the United States of America would face a coherent and focused and effective opposition. And we don't have that with the Democratic Party now that's being run by Chuck Schumer, who's a total corporatist, Nancy Pelosi, who is just not up for the job, and Tom Perez. I mean, I met Tom Perez. There's no there there. You know, so we have a completely corrupted and weak and ineffective National Democratic Party that is in desperate need of leadership. Now, Dianne Feinstein is pretty much the fourth wheel in the leadership of the National Democratic Party, or certainly up there, having been senator from the biggest state in the country since the 1990s, and has a very powerful perch in the U.S. Senate. If she's defeated by a 50-year-old Hispanic left-leaning up-and-comer like Kevin DeLeon, Kevin DeLeon will become a major figure in the National Democratic Party and will signal, hopefully, in my mind, the more rapid demise of this corporate leadership that has just rolled over for Donald Trump. You know, I get fundraising letters, emails every day from Nancy Pelosi saying how terrible Trump is, but never saying what the Democratic Party stands for. And, you know, what does the Democratic Party stand for? I don't see much. I don't see them pushing national health care or an end to the empire or complete civilization of the United States. We do have one guy, Bernie Sanders, who's out there with tremendous charisma and a complete integrity fighting for an alternative vision for this country. But he is 74. And, you know, he could run for president in 2020. He could have won, as far as I'm concerned, in 2016, or at least had Hillary Clinton brought him in as vice president. We wouldn't have Donald Trump. But I think that the corporate Democrats are way more comfortable with Donald Trump than they are with Bernie Sanders. And for Kevin, that's why this race is so important, because I think that Kevin DeLeon, if he follows Bernie's path and becomes an outspoken and uncompromising left progressive, can win this race and can really, really signal a shift in the leadership of the corporate Democratic Party. So, Susie, as a member of the Democratic National Committee, God forbid, what do you think about that?
So I think that for grassroots candidates who catch fire, right, I think what generally happens is that people rise up around them. So when Bernie Sanders was running, it's not like he, you know, he created a fundraising website and people started giving money. And then it occurred to them that when they averaged it, that the average donation was $27. It's not that he like went out there and said, I want everyone to give me $27, right? And it happens that way, that volunteers will rise up around candidates, you know, small dollar donations will rise up around candidates. And I think that Kevin has an extremely good chance of being that type of candidate in this election in California. And one of the things that I would say, which puts him in a class of his own, and maybe even more extraordinary than Bernie Sanders in some cases, is that Kevin can create an extremely diverse coalition, which will attract Latinos, which will attract African-Americans, which attracts people from all different socioeconomic groups. California is a huge state. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing sort of how he begins now to reach out to the entire state in this election. And I have a feeling that, you know, he's going to catch fire. I mean, I don't know if Dianne Feinstein's going to ever debate him, frankly, because I don't think she has anything to win by doing that. But, you know, if that happens, even if it doesn't happen, I think that, you know, he's supposed to make this case for himself and for change in this country. I mean, this is, you know, Dianne Feinstein is a woman who cut $4 billion from food stamps in 2006, who voted to have a wall between Mexico and California, you know, who voted to reject racial statistics on the death penalty, who was an avid anti-death penalty supporter. And even when she was booed at the California Democratic Party convention several years ago, she used that as part of her ads in order to attract Republicans. So there are stark differences between these two candidates. And if Kevin is able to get, you know, the people power and the money in place and hire, you know, very good people. He's got a great staff now, and I'm sure he'll be expanding that. I think he actually has a pretty good shot.
But what will his impact be on the national party? Can he, in fact, move the national party to the left?
I think it'll definitely put cracks in the system. I mean, I think that, you know, this wouldn't be the first time that someone came in, you know, new who had, you know, sort of built a coalition like this and was progressive. And, you know, the first step is to, you know, get them to assimilate into the culture, which I think is very hard for Kevin because, like I said, he's really in a class of his own. But I think he's not a baby boomer. He's from my generation. He's a Gen Xer, and I'm a little bit younger than him. But, you know, that's a very sort of humble generation, very idealistic, people who tended not to get involved in politics as much, you know, and were okay with leaderless movements, frankly. You know, I mean, Kevin started out as an organizer on Prop 187 and affirmative action issues. And so, you know, for my generation, we tend to, like, focus on union organizing and, you know, these type of big movements where we're not necessarily leaders. But we're also extremely idealistic. So I think, you know, this would be sort of a huge shift in the paradigm.
Okay. Of course, Dianne Feinstein is not a baby boomer either, but that's a different story. RL, what do you think? Can Kevin DeLeon have a significant impact on the National Democratic Party?
Oh, absolutely. And a couple of different ways in which he would. Number one, he will walk into the Senate an order of magnitude better on immigration than anybody else currently sitting in either House of Congress. He's truly fierce on it. He's truly passionate on immigration. His heart is absolutely in the right place. And what I tell people is that way deep down, he still has the heart of an activist. A lot of politicians have lost that, but he is still an activist at heart. He shows up and he leads marches through the streets of Los Angeles and through the streets of Sacramento when Jeff Sessions shows up to announce that the Trump administration is going to sue California for daring to pass the California Values Act. There's Kevin marching in the streets against him. So number one, he's going to do that. Number two, he's going to, as I say, be a true leader on climate change, not just a reliable vote, but he would join with several of our best climate hawk leaders, people like Bernie Sanders, Jeff Merkley, Brian Schatz, Sheldon Whitehouse. He'd right away take their be in that pretty elite crowd. Barbara Boxer was up there. She was great. Sadly, Feinstein is just not quite the same. And another thing that people, I want to point this out because people talk about the sleeping power of the Hispanic vote. You know, you want to organize people. They always point to why don't Hispanics show up? Why don't Hispanic people vote in America? This population is growing. We need to acknowledge the fact that it is growing, and we need to embrace it. And my own particular issue, obviously, is climate change. And I know from looking at studies of both people within America and across the nation, it's white people in America who skew the polls. and it's basically the Fox News demographic. The people who watch Fox News, who don't believe in climate change, who are Republicans in America, we are very different from the rest of the world in terms of how we view climate change, and that is because of the Fox News demographic. Well, Kevin is going to connect the dots between Latinos who do care about climate change, but who are not quite sure how to wield their political power. He's going to wake them up, and we're going to actually be able to get some substantial legislation passed once we get him in the Senate, once we get a Senate majority, once we are able to impeach that orange fascist in the White House. I shouldn't go on. But I heard what you said, Harvey, okay. And I so hope that you are right about it. I heard what you said at the introduction of your show, and yeah. I so hope that, yes, he resigns.
Larry?
And take Larry Scott Pruitt with him.
If Kevin wins this and pulls this out, it won't only have an impact. It would be an earthquake in regards to the politics of the Democratic Party to think that an entrenched incumbent who is has all the support of the Democratic power structure gets upended by Kevin. That would be huge, and it would send a lot of hope to progressives throughout this country. And clearly, one of the things that people have raised in regards to why we need Feinstein reelected is her seniority. And one has to ask, well, what has her seniority gotten us? I mean, it's gotten us a lot of conservative votes that are in line with Republicans. We got someone there who's saying that we should be patient with Donald Trump and give him time. Someone who'll sit next to Donald Trump in the White House talking about gun control, giving him cover and giggling with him. I saw that. I was incredibly embarrassed for her, for us. And what Kevin says is that, look, you don't necessarily need seniority to have that impact. You take you look at Elizabeth Warren, who can advance an agenda, which she doesn't have all the seniority. And he even points out that even someone like Ted Cruz, who doesn't have seniority, unfortunately, advances his agenda. With someone like Kevin, who has the energy and the commitment and the heart, having him in the U.S. Senate would have a tremendous impact on issues that we can't even imagine. All right. Well,
if I can add really quickly, I would say that, you know, people have been preparing for Dianne Feinstein's exit from the U.S. Senate for a while. And it was actually shocking to some of us in California that she decided to run again. So it won't necessarily be the loss of Dianne Feinstein, you know, from the U.S. Senate, because I think people have, you know, were expecting her either not to run or to resign. But it will be that they won't necessarily get to pick who succeeds her. And that goes back to the fact that she is not going to necessarily serve out her entire term. And so they want to be, you know, part of who gets picked to be the incumbent when that person runs in 4 years.
Right. So that's a big issue. I think that the Kevin campaign needs to make it clear that it's pretty clear she could very high likelihood resign within the next 2 years, which means that Gavin Newsom, rather than the people of California, would choose the next senator. I do want to express my fervent hope that the De Leon campaign will focus at least a little bit on shutting Diablo Canyon, the last two nuclear reactors in California, which pose a daily threat to the climate and to the survival of all of us in Los Angeles. God forbid anything happens there. We're 5 hours downwind. That's it. We're dead meat here, or radioactive meat in Southern California. I want those two reactors shut. I would assume that Kevin is going to be better on that than Feinstein, and something needs to happen. Of course, Trump right now is trying to bail out all the nuclear and coal plants. Quite an amazing move on his part, but certainly to be expected. But to my mind, the most hopeful part is that, you know, that if he wins and if he overturns her, that we start to see a real turnover in the National Democratic Party, because these people are totally brain dead. The whole campaign in the midterms is about Donald Trump, and there's no alternative vision. The Democratic Party is not putting forward anything that people would vote for. They're all just running against Donald Trump, which, given who it is pretty effective, but nonetheless, it ain't going to cut it in the long term. Let's talk now about some of the congressional races in California. These are really important. Three seats in particular, Devin Nunes, Kevin McCarthy, and Dana Rohrabacher. Now, in the jungle primary, there was a lot of fear that these guys were all going to wind up in races unopposed by a Democrat, because there was a fear that in these districts that a Republican would come in second and there would be no challenger. But that really didn't happen, did it? So we have 14 Republican seats of the 53 in California that are held by Republicans, and seven of them apparently are being seriously contested with Democratic opposition. So, Susie, do you want to start with these three seats and then give us an overall picture of the battle for the Congress as it plays out in California?
Yeah. So first of all, I want to give kudos to the California Democratic Party and Eric Bauman in particular, who's our chair, for ensuring that we have Democratic challengers in all of these races. So we definitely you know, are in at least a position where we could snag some of these seats. Now, I am, like, on the grassroots level, I've been running phone banks into some of these districts every Thursday and actually talking to voters who are, for the large part, you know, very anti-Trump, particularly if they're Democrats or no party preference. And so I think it's going to obviously depend on turnout, as it always does. I'm a little worried that we have a Republican contender for governor, because I think that helps drive out Republican voters because they have someone that they can come out for, as well as the fact that the Republican Party seems to really be hammering away at the fact that they don't want to lose these seats. So it's going to be a bit of an uphill battle, but you know, we need to drive turnout from the Democrats. And that's the key, because in the end, it's just all about numbers. And so
well,
that's
my
it.
Understanding
so we just
is that the feeling was that there were 7 of the 14 Republican incumbents were somewhat vulnerable, and they will all be facing Democrats. RL, what do you think?
You know, real interesting mix of stories to tell. So California 48, the Dana Rohrabacher seat, one of the races that you mentioned, I would have loved to have somebody really good on climate run in that race, because Rohrabacher himself has been one of those loud-mouthed climate deniers, what I call the Fox News demographic. None of the people who ran were especially good on climate. The race for second place is still going on. The leading two contenders are Democrat named Harley, Democrat named Hans. Last night, Harley was ahead by 75 votes. This morning, Hans was ahead by 55 votes. I may be backwards on this, by the way, but anyway, the point is that if you're involved in this race, keep on paying attention as they continue to count the votes. And on that subject of voting, because, Harvey, I know you're really, really passionate about this, I want to emphasize how important it is that Democrats not just register voters, but in places like that Devin Nunes district, they actually show Latinos how to vote and do some major league outreach to show them that, yes, your vote is secret. I've heard all sorts of horror stories coming out of that district in particular, where the employers all take the workers in the food processing plants. This is a very agricultural district. They take the food processing workers. They make sure that if you can vote, your vote means if you vote for Nunes, that means that you are still employed at this firm. If you don't vote for Nunes, kiss your job goodbye. And they do everything they can to intimidate people into thinking that their votes are public. And workers need to be told over and over and over again, your vote is secret. Don't be intimidated. This is a major issue. And all the national Democrats, they look at this district. They look at California 10. On paper, these are blue districts because we've done a good job of registering Latino Democrats. We don't do a good job of getting Latino Democrats to actually turn out. And so the only way we're ever going to defeat Nunes, Jeff Denham, and a few others is by actually getting Latino voters into the polls and getting them to vote like Democrats. And the Republicans just play such horrible, dirty tricks. There's a district attorney race right now up in Yolo County where one of my friends is reporting to me that the incumbent is freaking out trying to disqualify voters with Hispanic-sounding last names because they might be illegal. Well, if they're illegal, they weren't registered to vote in the first place. But good horrors, what might happen if we have scary brown people voting?
Yeah. That's an old tactic, by the way, telling workers that their jobs are going to go away if the Democrat wins.
Oh,
Larry, what do you got to say on this?
Yeah, well, you wanted to say something, Ariel?
Yeah, well, no, this is Susie. I wanted to point out that, Harvey, of the 7 districts that you were talking about, those are districts where Clinton won by a very slim margin. For Nunez's district, however, so Nunez, basically won by more than 30 points in 2016, and Trump won that district by about 9 points. So that's the Nunez district is a little different than a lot of the other districts that we're looking at, just because even though he should be the clear one to beat because, he's against the FBI and he's, avidly pro-Trump, it's also just a harder district because of Republican registration and the fact that there are a lot of very pro-Trump constituents.
Right. And the other factor is some of the other districts, you had Republicans who decided not to run, seeing the writing on the wall, and that's ISIS, ISA, and Ed Royce. And so,
yeah.
the challenge there is going to be equally as hard. One of the concerns we have is there's at the same time there's going to be a ballot measure on that might help drive Republican voters, and that's one to repeal the recently gas tax that was enacted. And we saw one of the bad things that happened in the election was Republicans and right forces used the gas tax to target a state senator, Josh Newman, in the Orange County area, and were able to recall him based on his vote for the gas tax. And that puts the supermajority of Democrats in the state legislature in jeopardy. And the fear is that that might have somewhat of an effect on the election in November. All it means is that we just have a harder task ahead of us and more work that we need to do to ensure that we're able to flip the House.
So the candidates from the on the energy issue, RL, that are in these key races, are there any in particular that you think are important or more important than others?
So we endorse all over the country. So, for example, in Nebraska 02, we endorse the progressive running against the DCCC-backed candidate because she, Kara Eastman, had been an outspoken opponent of the Keystone XL pipeline, while Brad Ashford, the guy had been in Congress. He had voted for the Keystone XL pipeline. Obviously, Keystone has always been a top priority for our movement, and so we didn't want him back in office. And so we backed Kara Eastman. We helped get her elected. Or I should say win her primary. Now she needs to go get elected.
She was successfully nominated in Nebraska, and you think she'll win?
She's got a battle, but it's a very, very, very flippable seat. It's perfectly purple. It's neither red nor blue. It's very balanced. And she worked hard to get that primary win, by the way. Brad Ashford didn't go out and knock on doors. She went and actually talked to voters. And I just can't emphasize enough how important it is that candidates actually work for the job that they want. Sounds silly, doesn't it?
We're almost
in
out
Texas.
We have a few more minutes, but I want to make sure everybody identifies each other. Let's go in reverse order. Larry, how do people get a hold of you, Larry Gross?
They can get a hold of us. Our website is cesinaction.org. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/cesinaction. That's the way.
Okay, and RL?
RL Miller. I tweet too much as RL_Miller. I'm on Twitter. And the website is Climate Hawks Vote, Hawks as in the birds. Yes, we're raptors. Yes, we're fierce. And I love those hawk pictures too. They're just gorgeous birds. Remind me how important it is that we actually connect with nature. So Climate Hawks Vote,
okay.
And I'm RLM at climatehawksvote.com.
And I have a house to take you to RL where you can see hawks on a pretty regular basis up near Dodger Stadium.
Awesome.
Susie Shannon?
So I'm on Twitter at Susie Shannon, SUSIESHANNON, and on Facebook. And all my information is at CADEM.org under the DNC.
Okay. And let's go now. We've talked about the House and the Senate. Susie Shannon, are there other important races nationwide, since you're on the DNC, that people need to look at?
Oh my God, there's so many. I think, you know, obviously Paul Ryan resigned, and we're looking at Randy Bryce.
That's in northern Wisconsin.
Well, at least I am, yeah. my main focus is going to be California for the general.
Okay. RL?
Nationwide, I'm excited about all the candidates that we're backing. We've backed Sean Kasten running against Peter Roskam in the Illinois 06. Roskam is now pretending that he's what we call a climate peacock, where he's joined this Climate Solutions Caucus and pretends to suddenly care. And I'm sorry if I start ranting about each and every one of these guys.
Well, don't get me going on the people who, don't get me going on the people who claim to be concerned about climate and are supporting nuclear power. And I think it's so ironic now and so perfect that Trump is supporting both coal and nuclear power at the same time. You know, all these people who think nuclear or say nuclear is going to help with climate, I think they took some bad acid, frankly. Larry Gross, Nationwide.
Well, along with the wish that you had, imagine if we can get Ted Cruz out there. So go Beto O'Rourke, and let's see Texas move towards the blue side of the world.
That would be truly amazing. You know, it happened in Alabama. It could happen in Texas, right? I mean, what I would like to see is that Ted Cruz be replaced by Tom Cruise. I think that would be really a lot of fun. And I'm going to reiterate, as I did at the top of the hour, I do believe that knowing the criminal history of Donald Trump, I do believe that if the Democrats take one or both houses of Congress, that he will resign before the new Congress comes in. There will be a health issue. There'll be something, you know, somebody will hit him with a golf ball. But I do not think that Donald Trump will stick around for one of the houses of Congress being Democrat. Thank you, guys. Thank you so much. Next week,
thank you.
Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.